How are we doing today, you guys? Welcome to the 121st episode of the EVT podcast. This is Austin. I'm one of the hosts. I want to apologize for the quality. I was actually in a snowstorm in, let's not call it a storm. I was in snow in Amarillo. Couldn't get home to the Wi-Fi, so we had to kind of improvise and use a Skype call. So that's the reason for the quality on the audio being so bad, so that's a little disclaimer for you. No disclaimer, nothing said to be sad about here. We do have Jeffrey Paternostro, the head prospects writer for Baseball Prospectus, my favorite personal site when it comes to tracking, minor league players and, you know, looking at lists. It's list season. 7 Padres landed on this list, and we had the opportunity to talk to Jeff about it. And here we go. Padres on a mission.
So Baseball Prospectus is just released, well, not just released, but I guess it was, last week or in the last week or so, released the top 100 prospect list, and 7 San Diego Padres found themselves on that list. Seems to be a common theme in the last couple years. Give us your thoughts on this farm system, which you have been quoted as saying the best farm system you've ever ranked as your time at Baseball Prospectus as a lead prospect writer. So give us a little bit about the San Diego Padres and how AJ Preller has done such an adequate job of building this farm system.
So that was last year. I will point out that this year they are number 2 on our org rankings, but that's actually fairly impressive given that they also graduated Fernando Tatis, Chris Paddock, and Luis Urias. I think all in our top 25 last year, and they're still the second best system in baseball.
Yeah.
They do make my life pretty easy when I know I can just pencil in a half dozen to 10 names on my 101 every year. it's still a very good system. It's not quite as deep as it's been the last couple of years, but that's just going to be a normal cyclical thing as you graduate these guys. And turn them into, for the most part, good major leaguers or send them on in trade to improve the major league team. That should always be the goal of having a good farm system, is to turn it into a good major league team, whether it's with the players themselves graduating or trading them for players that can contribute at the highest level.
Yeah, the Padres are slowly building towards that. It's nice to see that being done in San Diego. A few prospects were moved here and there. We'll get into the trades a little later on, but let's stick with the top 101 list. Number 4 and number 15 on that list are Mackenzie Gore and Luis Patino. Quite a awesome, for lack of better words, duo to build your future around with two young 20-year-olds like that. Give us your impression of both these young pitchers.
So it's interesting. We actually had staff members that saw both this year and preferred Patino to Gore, and I get it.
Okay. Wow.
It's so, like, Patino, like, this is the worst possible way. I'm going to be clear from the outset. Worst possible way to, not to evaluate per se, but to rank guys on a list, is to do it off short showcase looks. Mm-hmm. So this didn't really play into it, but I saw them both at Futures this year. And Gore was good, but he's not the kind of guy that's really going to pop in a one-inning sample. Just because he has, you know, a full four-pitch mix, so the way he can turn over a lineup multiple times. And it's not going to light up your radar gun. It's a very good fastball, but it's not going to light up your radar gun. Patino came in and just shoved. And it was just 97 with a plus-plus slider. It's like, oh, okay, this is pretty good. And he just came in and just, like, buzzsawed the best prospects in baseball. And you're just like, yeah. But again, that's, you know, one inning. I think Patino would have been 2. You don't want to go off that. But then I talked to our people that, you know, saw them in the Midwest League, Cal League, AA over the last year or two. And there's this, like, really the difference in stuff here isn't huge. You know, you could argue Gore's breaking ball is the single best pitch between the two of them, but I really do like Patino's sliders. They both have 4 pitches that project as average or better. They're both going to have plus fastballs. And they both kind of have funky deliveries, if that's the thing you're into. they've both been used as you'd expect 19 and 20 year olds to be used in full season ball, you know, fairly judiciously in terms of, you know, in-game workload and across the season workloads. So do we really know what they look like as 180 inning starters yet? No. That's going to be a problem with almost every pitching prospect you're going to rank nowadays, outside of a few exceptions in the high minors or a few outliers in terms of durability. You know, we'll see how that plays out in the coming years. But the long and the short of it is it's two pitchers with front of the rotation upside, you know, number two starters. And like, would I be shocked if either of them became aces 5 years from now? You look back and either has won a Cy Young Award. I wouldn't. Like, I don't generally project number one starters. I think that's something that has to be borne out at the major league level, like year over year. You need to see the 200 inning durability for a long period of time before you can sort of retroactively like, oh, that guy's a number one starter. But the potential is certainly there. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and especially when you got a guy like Vatino, where like he hasn't been pitching very long, and you know, and I talked to him this year, and I asked him about, you know, because everybody seems to want him to have that four pitch mix like Gore, and he said once I started throwing my slider, I started losing a lot of feel for my curveball. So it seems like he's trying to fit that in.
That's not uncommon.
Yeah, the slider is just like so dominant.
There are guys that can split out the breaking balls, but a lot of times when they add a, you know, whichever way you go, whether you're adding a curveball to a slider or a slider to a curveball, the pitches will tend to blend together. You'll see velocity overlap, and there'll be a band where they get slurvy. And, you know, some guys going curveball to slider, they'll add that hard slider and it'll tighten up their curveball. But that's, you know, the exception rather than the rule in a lot of cases. And like, it's a potentially average curveball. We had pretty good reports on it, but you know, if it's turning the slider from like a 7 to a 6 or a 55, what's the trade-off there? I mean, the ultimate issue with Patino is, and I mentioned this in his 101 comment in the annual, is, hey, he's a 6'1" righty. And there's always right. going to be a sort of an inherent bias. And it's something I try to keep in mind as an evaluator, but you know, he's not like short. It's not like Devi Garcia, but there's always going to be sort of, you know, durability questions, fastball plane questions with those guys. You know, would I be shocked if he has a better career than Gore? I wouldn't. And, you know, the number four prospect, or sorry, number five prospect or number four prospect versus a number 15 prospect, you know, that 10 spots is not insignificant at that portion of the list, but I think Mackenzie Gore is 62% more likely to have a better major league career. You want to do false precision.
Someone so far that we haven't really got to see a ton of this year, I mean, in his career, is CJ Abrams, a guy mm-hmm. that, you know, just kind of showed up on the circuit. What were your first impressions of him as a pro so far?
So it's interesting. Abrams was very difficult to rank in the context of the 101, especially. We tend generally to be fairly conservative with recent draftees, I think, relative to other sources. And that's something I'm sort of consciously aware of, because those post-draft looks can be misleading. Guys can be tired. You know, Adley Rutschman had mono at the end of the season for the first part of his pro career. It's a long year for them. Even the prep kids like Abrams have been playing showcases really since the previous November. In a lot of cases, you know, NHSI, I think, is in a couple weeks. So a lot of these major prep showcases start early and often, even before you get into high school ball and the transition from high school to the pros. But you can't argue with Abrams' pro performance, and the reports were great. The interesting thing and sort of the disconnect we had is we had pre-draft looks that were good, but weren't, you know, top 50 prospect in baseball good. So it's how do I sort of reconcile them? And again, it's a fairly short sample in the complex, and it is Arizona, which is a very, very nice place to hit. And it's, you know, 32 games. Ultimately, he hit 400. That's pretty good. And good performance always beats bad performance, but you know, performance exists to be explained by the tools. And like, the pre-draft reports didn't tell us he was that level of a hitter. So there's a few different things that could be going on here. Obviously, premium athlete, might have had the best athletic tools in the class overall, at least on the position player side. So that can translate quickly to the plate. You know, the athleticism can translate to the swing, can translate to the hit tool. It's one of those rankings I'm not like super confident in. Like, if you told me he was actually like the 10th best prospect in baseball, I'd be like, yeah, you might be right. You told me he's actually the 60th best prospect in baseball, I'm like, meh. Yeah, you might be right. I expect he'd go to Midwest League next year and we'll have a lot more information and a lot more looks, and sort of the variance and the uncertainty level there will change quickly. But that's like going to be true for almost every high level prep draftee, where we're not going to be super confident on those rankings. That's just, you know, part of the business, and you know, I'm okay with it. I think there's certainly a lot to like there, especially on like, he's a sure shot shortstop, great runner. So the floor there is going to be pretty high, even if the, you know, the hit tool, the 400 in the complex league is a bit of a lie. But I'm very curious. He's the guy we have a lot of guys in the Midwest League. He's the guy I'm going to be like breathing down our staff's neck in April. I'll be like, get me CJ Abrams looks as soon as possible, because I want more information here.
It's funny because I sat down with the Sad Poodles hitting coach the other day, and I was going through, I was asking him, you know, who are you excited to see this year? And the first person that came up out of his mouth without hesitation was Luis Campusano.
Yeah.
And I asked him why. And he's like, he's just the walking tank. You know, what makes this? I mean, he's not very tall, but he's built. You know, do guys like that usually stick behind the plate nowadays?
Yeah, I mean, it's actually a very good catcher body in a lot of ways. And he's pretty athletic for his size as well. And that usually gets beat out of you by 25 if you're catching 100, 120 games a year. But it's there now. And, you know, it's interesting because Campusano, we ranked a lot of catchers this year. Like, more than I'm comfortable with. And it's a lot of, like, young catchers, too. You know, guys that maybe don't have a ton of upper minors experience, which generally makes me uncomfortable. We have a saying it on the prospect team, which is catchers are weird. Because the amount of development you have to do on the defensive aspects of your game, whether it's, you know, game calling, working with pitchers, you know, just the day-in, day-out rigors of being a catcher, even in the minors, when you're not necessarily working a full catching on them, extra day off, DH you once or twice a week, it can kind of cause what, you know, John Sickles at The Athletic coined many years ago now, young catcher offensive stagnation syndrome. Has not been an issue for Luis Campusano. And our reports here are he's a very, very good hitter. And the athleticism's there for him to be a very good defensive catcher. And look, if there's going to be some sort of robot or automated strike zone, like, who cares if he frames well? Like, I don't know. I don't know how that's going to play out and how we evaluate catching prospects going forward. He's a guy I have less concerns with because he's, like, a better defensive catcher at present than someone like, I don't know, Dalton Barsho or Ronaldo Hernandez or Mario Feliciano or guys like that. But it does make sort of the minutia of deciding where to rank these guys a little more difficult if you're suddenly changed the defensive bar for what's okay for catching, because, you know, framing is such a large part of that. Now it's just the computer tells you whether it's a ball or a strike.
Yeah, exactly. The game is ever evolving. I mean, there's just, it's impossible to get the same opinion from everyone when talking about the sport. And I think that's why we all love baseball so much, is that there's so many conflicting opinions. Let's talk about someone who's probably arguably the most polarizing prospect on the Padres team right now, and that's Taylor Trammell,
my man.
Where are you? Okay, you're good, because I mean, it seems like,
can I swear on this podcast? Is that okay?
Yeah, as long as you didn't get too vulgar, that would be fine.
Fucking love Taylor Trammell.
Nice.
It's crazy how back and forth people are with him.
I fully admit at this point, and I have people on my staff that saw him a ton this year, like yelling at me that you're too high on him, and I'm too high on him. And they're like, he's a fourth outfielder. I'm like, maybe he is, but he's my guy. So,
wow, it's funny that we get the conflicting reports. Yeah.
No, I mean, I get
some people are like, yeah, I mean, the potential is there, and But you're still talking about what, a 22-year-old that could still be a junior or senior in college who, you know, it takes a little time to figure out. The tools are there. It's give us just your interactions with him and your opinion with him. Obviously, you've done well in interacting with him, and he's made a favorable impression on you.
Yeah, I mean, it's plus hit, plus power. And I get, like, I think he can play center field. My staff and I have a disagreement. I'm like, it's not a good arm. Like, it's really not. Mm-hmm. But I think the athleticism's so good, you just put him in center and, like, don't worry about it. Like, it's a left field arm, but so ultimately it's how much power actually gets into games. And the Reds did a lot of things with his swing that I haven't liked over the last 2 years. And I think some of that needs to get worked out. I think it was actually a very good change of scenery. I really liked that trade as like a change of scenery pick for him, because I think the Padres, you know, have had a little bit more success in recent years than the Reds, kind of getting swing change guys to pop a little bit or unlocking things with guys. And that's not a good sort of philosophy to use when specifically ranking guys. We always try to rank them in a vacuum as much as possible. But I do think his 2020 is going to be very interesting. Now, obviously the Padres have done some things, you know, traded for a bunch of outfielders, then traded some outfielders, and there's not a necessarily clear path to playing time unless he hits in El Paso, but you know, this stuff tends to work itself out, and he's a guy I think that can force the issue. Look, I fully admit, if there's one guy on this 101 that I'm going to be way off on, it's probably Taylor Trammell, but I'm okay with that because I've seen like the potential skill set there, and it's, you know, an above average everyday center fielder that makes some all-star games.
It's just so crazy, just the way that people think about him, and it's just completely bipolar. And, you know, this is a guy that I saw that, you know, they did make a lot of changes with his swing once they got comfortable in Amarillo, and he started hitting a lot in the Texas League playoffs. I mean, everybody in the system is going to remember, you know, him hitting
So here's the thing, like, and this is much more qualitative than quantitative, but like, yeah, the walk-off grand slam is, there's just a lot going on there, and it's not right to read into it. Again, I've always said that you shouldn't look at, you know, one game showcase looks. When I saw him at the Futures game in 2018, it was impressive. Like, it's just, and look, that will tell you on some level what is possible. Is it like the guiding light given all other staff looks and all the other information we have available on the player? Maybe not, but you know, this is one where I fully admit there's a few every year. I always say our top 101 is not my pref list. It is a 20-person endeavor. There's a lot of Excel spreadsheets. There's a lot of conference calls. There's a lot of email threads. But generally speaking, there's a couple guys every year where I'm just like, look, my name's on the list and he's going there. I don't like to do that. I am a believer in the wisdom of crowds and the democracy of the Baseball Prospectus prospect team, but I'm ranking Taylor Trammell there. It's the way it's going to be.
Yeah. We just talked about polarizing a guy that, you know, has never really stood out for, didn't stand out for me because I didn't get to see enough of him. I don't think I saw Adrian Morahone throw more than, I feel like towards the end of the season, more than two inning spurts. I mean, can you explain to me somebody, a guy that here in Amarillo didn't get to see a lot of Adrian Morahone, what gives him the ability to be on a list like this?
It's like, it's really good stuff. And like, I get it. Like, it's another, he's had a bunch of injury issues. There's general durability concerns and efficiency concerns with him, even outside of the injury issues. You know, it's potentially a 70 grade fastball. He's up to 98 in short bursts in the big leagues. He's got a really good changeup. You know, the curveball is projectable at this point. And it's, you know, it's eight figure stuff is what they gave him as a bonus. And it's eight figure stuff when you see it. And sort of the upside potential there in it is essentially what gets him ranked there, with the knowledge that, you know, there's significant relief risk here. But, you know, the two pitch combo as a lefty out of the pen, if the stuff plays up, is also one of those guys where I'm comfortable ranking him where he ended up.
Yeah, he, you know, a lot of people might have dropped him from their list because of the concerning, like you mentioned, about durability and the fact that he was used as a reliever for the Padres. But we're talking about a guy who's 3 days younger than Mackenzie Gore, and already made a major league debut. So yeah. there does need to be some kind of just a grain of salt that needs to be taken with what he's produced so far. You can't argue with the stuff. You just hope that he figures it out for sure. Moving on in your list, our baseball prospectus list, number 94, kind of a, maybe a bit of a surprise, was Gabriel Arias, who's definitely moving up the ranks, had an excellent year in the Cal League last year, showed a lot of power, a little bit of an increased plate discipline, but give us your impression of the defensive specialist.
I don't know if that's entirely fair. I mean, he's a very good defender, don't get me wrong. So he's a guy where you sort of look at the glove, and we had a lot of looks at Lake Elsinore. It feels like half my staff lives in the Inland Empire at this point. we had a lot of looks at that team. And like ultimately, the backbone of our list is live looks. Like, I want to know what my staff sees. And the looks at Arias are like, he could be a plus-plus defender at shortstop. And if you're a Rule 7 defender at shortstop, like, how much do you really have to hit? And there's some positive markers there. We generally ranked him in a tier with other sort of what you might consider, you know, glove-first shortstop guys, Andrés Giménez in the Mets system, Brian Rocchio in the Indian system, Gerardo Perdomo in the Diamondbacks system. You know, outside of Giménez, he played at a higher level than all of them. And yeah, it's Lake Elsinore. So I don't know how much you want to read into the top line numbers, but like our minor league DRC, even taking Park and League into account, thought he was a well above average hitter there as a 19-year-old in high A. And there's stuff to like. It's a little C ball, hit ball. The approach isn't great. The thing you like to see, and this is the value of having half of my staff in Southern California, is you see a guy throughout the year like that. You can see the adjustments he made. And in the second half of the year, he started to adjust to, you know, better breaking balls and sort of really came out of his shell offensively. And I think is a guy that, I don't know if he's going to take a step forward because AA is another big jump for him this year. So that might kind of mask some of the advances that he made offensively in the second half of the season. But, you know, he's a guy that could be, I don't think it's going to be huge offensive upside, but if it's like average and average power, 260, 18 home runs with that defense, that's like, this is a bad comp. I hate using comps generally. That's like Brandon Crawford. That's a great everyday player. The glove's so good, he's going to probably get to the majors in some capacity just off that anyway. So I think there's a fairly decent floor there for a guy that's, you know, once you get into the 90s, like the difference between the 90th best prospect in baseball and the 150th isn't super significant. And that's not a cop-out. I don't mean it as a cop-out. We ranked him, you know, he's on the list over some other guys like, you know, Jose Garcia is a similar shortstop type profile in the risk system for a reason. And, you know, we picked Arias because essentially our staff reports bore him out as a, you know, potential above average regular in the majors.
That's probably the guy that I'm most excited to see next year. You know, everybody's talking about Campusano. I just want to see what Arias can do with the glove. And especially with this ballpark at this altitude in Amarillo, I mean, just excited to see what he can do with the bat too. Was there anybody that just missed the cut Padre-wise for the 100?
So there wouldn't be anybody like in the next 10. We had really good reports on Tirso Ornelas, who technically isn't the next guy off, but, and like, look, the numbers are rough. I'm not gonna sugarcoat it here. But
the swing is great.
He was another guy, right? that has some injury issues.
Yeah.
You know, he was better when he came back after they gave him sort of a little respite and Arizona for a couple months. But it's big up the middle tools. And it's a guy where it's very, very boomer bust. You know, he might end up in right field. He might be more of a fourth outfielder type. I expect next year that he will not be the ninth best prospect in the system. It'll go one way or the other in fairly emphatic terms.
Yeah, no,
but
he's
a guy where, you know, a guy worth keeping an eye on.
Yeah, yeah. You get the sense that he could figure it out, but at the same time, you get the sense that he could just be one of those guys with all the tools in the world that just didn't figure it out. So it's it's interesting. It's interesting. I love the athleticism you see from him at the size and the fact that he played center field at some point early in his career. I mean, there's a lot to like about him, but he's still very young. So it's you know, the jury's still out, if you will. Give us your impression of Reggie Lawson, who came on towards the end of the year, showing increased velocity in the AFL and kind of opted against surgery and really looked to look more promising with his development. You have any opinion on Mr. Lawson?
Yeah, he's a guy that really got on this list based off our AFL looks. You know, it's extreme relief risk here. I mean, he's probably just a reliever, which is fine. You know, especially at that point, you know, even in good systems, when you get sort of the, you know, the back end of the top 20, you're gonna be like, all right, if this guy can be a, you know, pitch in the eighth inning for a major league team, you know, throw him on there, especially, you know, he's could certainly move quickly if they want to make him a reliever full time. You know, the durability and injury issues, A, will probably force him to the pen anyway, but B, there's reason to just keep him stretched out as a starter now just so he gets the reps. You know, he gets the innings on the mound, and you can move him, you know, to the pen as needed after that. But it's, you know, it's a fairly traditional, you know, fastball, breaking ball, relief type profile, mid-90s with life, swing and miss curveball. A changeup isn't actually that bad. Like, it's not something where it's, you know, irrespective of anything else, I'd be like, well, he just doesn't have enough changeup to start. You know, he might. You know, but it's more the durability concerns where you just might let him loose and not worry so much about the changeup development and make him your fastball, breaking ball, seventh or eighth inning guy.
You know, we keep talking about this farm and how good it is, but I mean, it seems to be getting better with the more talent that comes in, especially with these J2 guys this year. I mean, who really stood out to you as far as the guys that the Padres signed this year?
So here's the thing about J2 guys, and I have a little J2 guy spiel. And I'm actually going to relate this back to some of the guys we talked about already. The 2016 J2 Padres class is probably going to end up something close to legendary.
Yeah.
But if you actually look at how they're, and this is always kind of a moving target, but if you look how they rank now on this list, the best prospect was a converted shortstop that was signed throwing in the mid-80s for $130,000.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, the guy
and
got
where's
the most
Luis Almanzar?
The guy that got the most money was Morejon, which makes things a little more complicated because of the, you know, the Cuban signing rules at the time. But, you know, someone like, you know, Jason Rosario or Rolando Bolaños, you know, were signed for far more money than Patino. You know, we ranked Tucapita Arcano ahead of those guys, and he was a mid-six figures guy. So, you know, this stuff changes so quickly, and a lot of these deals are agreed to long before they're 16, and even by the time they're 16, doesn't kind of... You know, I thought the interesting thing that Baseball America did this year and Ben Badler did was he actually waited to... He didn't rank these guys on July 2nd. He ranked them, you know, in the offseason where, you know, it's still... You're trying to compare 16-year-olds, but at least you maybe have tricky league or you have, you know, guys that come over for fall instructs. There's at least a little bit more information. It's like getting information on these guys is extremely difficult even before you consider the fact that they're 16 and like, what are these guys going to even look like, you know, potentially we're, you know, 4 years out from the 2016 J2 signing class. And a lot of those guys have gone in a lot of different directions, since then. It's not linear. Patino popped fairly quickly for us once he got to full season ball, but you know, it's not the idea that where it's like, there are guys certainly that will, we ranked Jason Dominguez very highly this year, who was the consensus best international free agent. Like, maybe it'll work out, maybe it won't. I don't know. We ranked Kevin Maitan pretty highly a few years ago, but by the same token, you just wonder. Franco was a big bonus guy. Vladimir Guerrero Jr. was a big bonus guy. Juan Soto was a big bonus guy. I'm not trying, this is just sort of like I'm trying to create a framework when I start actually talking about the guys they signed. This stuff changes quickly. Like, I can tell you that, Ismael Mena is a hit over power center fielder with good athletic tools. I can tell you that, Preciado's got a really nice swing from both sides in batting practice and a very projectable frame and probably moves third base. But it's like, you really don't see these guys in meaningful game action for sometimes even up to, over a year after they sign. I suspect the Padres tend to be fairly aggressive with these guys. I expect, Preciado will go to extended spring training and, the AZL after that and see how it goes from there. Probably the same with Mena. With the pitchers, it gets a little bit different because there's a lot of other things that go into there in terms of like load management and, how you want to develop those guys. But like, would I be shocked if, Preciado's on the 101 next year? No, because it's a really good body and a really good swing. But it's like, until you really see them in game action, you just don't know is the thing.
Yeah, you don't. And then you're talking about 17-year-olds that might not get an opportunity to even play higher than the DSL next season. So it's right, hard to give an honest opinion of them when they're facing pitching that's literally not up to par to what they should be at that age. So it's difficult. I mean, these are teenagers. You don't want to rush them off the island and stick them in Arizona when they're not ready mature-wise. So there's a fine line, and it's interesting.
The acculturation does not get talked about enough, too.
Yes,
that makes a huge difference.
Yes, and some have to be mature enough to handle it. I mean, they really do. They have to have the mental fortitude to be able to come to a different country and be able to learn.
And teams vary wildly in terms of having the right support systems in place for stuff like that. Because you take Preciado. I guess I'll use the example here. And like, let's say he shows really good starting in on minor league camp, and you send him to extended, and he looks good enough that you want to skip him right over the complex and send him to short season. Like, that's a whole nother universe.
Yeah.
To anything he's been used to before.
Yep. I mean, it's,
I don't know if the Padres specifically use host families or if they're just like, putting these guys in, the 6-2 apartment efficiencies. Yeah. but it's a huge culture shock.
It is. It really is. Thankfully, the Padres do have host families in Tri-City and in lower levels that are welcoming and that have the ability to kind of just ease these Dominican and Venezuelan and Latino kids into the community and into the just. I mean, it's. I love talking to them and just it's tough for them to even go out and order food at a fast food restaurant and stuff like that. People don't really realize the difficulty it is for them. And I'm always encouraging them, I try to speak Spanish and I try to tell them that, it's tough and nobody's judging you. And it's tough though. I commend them a lot because at 16, 17 years of age, I definitely wasn't in another country playing a professional sport. That's for sure. It's tough. The game of baseball is ever evolving. The San Diego Padres are slowly transitioning into a winning team, are attempting to transition into a winning team. In the beginning of the podcast, we mentioned a couple of trades. I'd love to get your idea on a couple of deals that went down this winter. Let's first talk about the FAM trade with the Devil Rays. I'd love to hear your thoughts on Xavier Edwards moving forward, and if you have anything on Cronenworth, who was picked up by the Padres.
So Edwards was, you know, ranked at the back end of our top 100. I don't look at another list, so I don't know if we're going to be higher or lower. I do know that, generally speaking, I think Edwards gets a little bit overrated because of the existence of fantasy baseball. That's just because he's going to be a huge fantasy star because he's a top of the scale runner. And he'll hit enough and, you know, he, middle infield eligibility. Like, he's probably a second baseman and probably fine there. Like, he's not a guy you need to move to center field, although might be an interesting thing. I wouldn't be shocked if the Rays do that. I think they've talked about that, or at least considered it with Bedell Brujan, who's kind of a similar profile there. With Edwards, it's just kind of like, I mean, I like the trade fine. They don't really have a middle infield spot for him right now, and it's a good hit tool. The power is going to limit the sort of the upside on the profile. Like, these guys really have to hit like 290, 300 to be like, not to have value, but be like above average plus, you know, first division type starters. I think Xavier Edwards have a very long, successful career in the majors, which is why we ranked him in the top 101. But I do think that sort of the idea that, you know, he might steal 30 or 40 bases a year is just realistically more valuable to a fantasy team than it is in real life baseball. And I think sort of conversely, we ranked Arias one spot ahead of him. I think that just kind of elucidates the difference here, where there's like no value for being a really good defensive shortstop in fantasy baseball. But, you know, it's
the power,
a very good floor to. Yeah, and the power, too. But it's also a very good floor to sort of.
I hear you. Anything on Cronenworth? I know that there's potential of him pitching. He showed a decent breaking pitch to go with a mid-90s fastball. The swing came on in AAA this past year. Any reports that you've seen on him? I'm anxious to see what he looks like.
Yeah, I mean, he's like the Rays. I'm curious to see, you know, with sort of like the two-way rules and stuff like that. What teams are actually able to get. You know, the Rays have really kind of targeted this player too, and even beyond Brendan McKay, they have a few guys up and down the minors like this. I'm interested to see how he gets used. He's probably more of like a super utility type with the bat more than anything else. So it's like, how do you want to leverage that roster spot? Do you want to do the, you know, sort of the old 80s Davey Johnson, move him like back and forth between second base and pitching for the platoon advantage? Like, how creative do you really want to get with this sort of from like a on-field standpoint to leverage value? It's tough for like the non-Shohei Ohtani guys to really make this work long term that aren't sort of just complete freaks. Like, even Brendan McKay, who was a great college hitter, has never really developed. Like, the arm just developed faster than the bat. So, like, how long do you want to keep him down? You know, Cronenworth is something they've obviously experimented with a little bit later on, although he pitched a fair amount in college. So it's not like it's completely new to him. It's not like a full conversion. I'm just, it'll be an interesting, like, with sort of that 26-man roster spot. Like, he's, like, kind of the ideal 26-man.
Yeah, exactly.
In some cases.
And the Padres have Javier Guerra, which is kind of the same, type of player.
He's fun.
I mean, the same type of, I mean, throwing high 90s cheese up there. And
he had my favorite annual comment this year. It's interesting to see moving forward. He had my favorite annual comment this year because it pointed out that he was better as a reliever than the reliever he was traded for. even though he was a shortstop at the time.
That's some in Boston are still angry about the Kimbrel trade for some reason. Okay, let's move on to the second trade the Padres pulled off, and that was moving Luis Urias in a deal for Trent Grisham. The pitcher swap was kind of, you know, you can argue either way. I like Lauer a lot. Davies is, you know, it's but I think the main aspect of this trade was give us your opinion of Urias, and more importantly, if you have anything on Trent Grisham. It looks like the Padres are going to feature him in center field starting the season. Do you think he's going to be able to handle that defensively?
Man, that's an ask for me, especially in that park. Like, he's a guy that he's a swing change guy, and Milwaukee clearly unlocked something with him. I think that's something that's where he just sort of like went back to the swing he had in high school, which, you know, it makes sense for a guy that was drafted 15th overall as a as a prep bat to just stick with that swing. I think there's gonna be a significant swing and miss there. I'm not like super sold on the bat yet against major league pitching. I think there's some risk there, and like, I get it. I get the deal. I really like, and they clearly soured on Urias, which is fine. It's one of those things where, you know, I'm not in the room, and I get why they may have been a little down on him. It just seems like a weird way to sort of, you know, weird opportunity cost. Like, I don't know if they could have gotten like a better outfielder than Grisham for that. And it just might be a thing where, look, they rank internally, they think Grisham is better than Urias, or the value prop for them was close enough that they wanted the pitcher upgrade. There can be any number of factors that go into it. I mean, for me, Grisham is just, I think he's gonna be a little boom bust. I don't love him as a everyday center fielder. I think he's gonna be stretched there a little bit. You know, I think he's a fine regular, like an everyday guy. I feel like, I mean, meanwhile, the Brewers are probably going to play Urias at shortstop next to, like, that's going to be a fun defensive infield. I guess they'll just position him well.
I've always liked Urias.
I think he'll unlock a little more power. I think he never really got, like, a super clean shot at the job for a variety of reasons, but
there's something that we're not being privy about what happened between their relationship. Cause somehow along the line the signing of Ian Kinsler last year kind of signified that, okay, we're not comfortable with you moving forward. And I don't know what happened. I guess we'll never know what happened.
I get it. He's not a big guy. I know it was the AAA ball, and it's El Paso. Dude, hit 315, 398, 600 as a 22-year-old. He's always like, that power is probably not like super real, but he's always hit everywhere he's been except in the majors, which, you know, is a double-edged sword. It could mean he just needs to make adjustments, or it could mean whatever he was doing in the minors that shit don't work anymore against the best pitchers in baseball, which is a thing that can happen. But I just wish they'd given him a little bit more of a run out there.
Yeah, it's kind of strange that they didn't give him more playing time. But, you know, again, we're not privileged enough to know the inside information, if you will. Last thing before we get you out of here, Jeff, and we really sincerely appreciate the time, is I'd love to get your opinion on Mr. Owen Miller, someone who's just kind of just does everything well, just kind of flies under the radar. Was he given any talk, or was he given any consideration for the top 100 prospect list at all?
I don't think he was quite on our, I'd have to go back and look at like our long list, which I think was like 170 or 180 names. And I don't believe he was on it. I think the last Padres name on it was Marcano. So he'd be one spot off or whatever. But, you know, it's a very kind of, like a weird like infielder tweener-ish profile. Like there's no like even like fan, I guess he's a plus runner, but there's no like 55s even really on the scouting sheet otherwise. Like he does everything pretty well.
But you can't really complain too much either at the same regard, right? I mean, it's just...
Right, no, it's just like...
He's just boring, like...
Yeah, it's like mine. White it's bread, like one of those, you know, like, there's... I'd probably put him as, like, an OFP 55. We had OFP 55s that made the list, certainly. Like, some of those guys are a little bit closer to the majors or have a, you know, more obvious sort of up-the-middle plus defensive skill set or... maybe have a little bit more high variance and there's upside there and they're further away and they could look different in a year. Like Owen Miller's just going to look like Owen Miller. And that's fine. Yeah. You know, he's the guy that can play in the majors for 6, 8, 10 years and have a lovely little career playing spotting career, you right? here and there, 450 yeah. at-bats a season yeah. or whatever. And does everything. And look, sometimes these guys play up where you have a bunch of average tools and it interacts well in the majors and you have, I don't know, you know, Logan Forsythe or something like that for a couple seasons.
There you go. There
and then
you go.
Sometimes yeah, I mean, like the average hit tool is actually a 4 when you see major league pitching and it doesn't quite work as well. So there's like yeah. weird hidden risks there with the guys that don't really have a carrying tool.
Yeah. He's an interesting prospect because he's just so even keel and, more often than not, those stoic type of ball players are the ones who actually end up succeeding. They just kind of it just kind of happens for them. So, interesting stuff on Mr. Miller. Anything else before we get out of here, Jeff? Anybody that you think is flying under the radar of the Padre prospects right now? Anybody who you're looking forward to see other than these top 10 guys, 15 guys?
I would say top 15. He's actually inside the top 15. I feel like in any other system, like Edward Olivares would get more attention.
Oh, yeah.
Not because he's like an like amazing player or anything, but he's like the kind of guy that ends up at like the number 9 prospect in the system. He's a pretty good center fielder. He's a little bit on the old side for his levels, but he's still kind of like projectable. His, you know, offensive profile is improved. He's a pretty good defender. But there's just like a million outfielders in the system that are like a little bit toolsier, like your, you know, your Jason Rosarios and, you know, even Hudson Head to a certain extent. And he just kind of just goes about his business and is, again, like not all that dissimilar from Miller, like sort of the outfield version of it where there's no like standout tool here.
Yeah, there you go.
He's just going to be a good major leaguer for a long time.
Yeah, he's going to be in Major League camp this spring, so it'll be interesting to see how he...
They have so many outfielders.
They do. AJ Preller is something else when he constructs a roster. Yeah, I don't think anybody quite knows what he's doing, but it's interesting. It's fun. The Padres are definitely a team to talk about, and we appreciate you spending some time and discussing them with us, Jeff. Thank you so much for your time. Everyone should check out the top 101 prospects on Baseball Prospectus. Just get all their work. I mean, Baseball Prospectus does an excellent job of digesting all these writers, all these players, and they have writers that are in the systems in seeing these guys firsthand, which is also important. You want to be able to get a inside information on these guys. You want to be able to talk to them after the game. You want to see them eye to eye. You want to just digest all you can from them. And Jeff and his staff do an excellent job of doing that. Mr. Paternostro, thank you so much for spending some time with us. This is, I believe, your third time on the show. We really sincerely appreciate you spending time with us.
Thank you. Anytime, guys.
That was our conversation with Baseball Prospectus writer Jeffrey Paternostro. He's the lead prospects writer for the site, one of the best sites in the business. My personal favorite when it comes down to analyzing players, just the write-ups and everything that you do get on the entire site. Again, thanks to Jeffrey for coming on, you know, spending a little time with us, talking about guys that we don't really usually get to talk about, you know, especially when it comes to guys like, you know, Takepito Morikano or, you know, Rezno Preciado. It's pretty cool to hear some names that, you know, we talk about Mackenzie Gore all the time, we talk about Luis Patino all the time, but, you know, it's nice to dabble in guys that are the future. I mean, Gabriel Arias, as mentioned over previous episodes, has been a personal favorite of mine lately, and will probably continue to be, and to hear his kind of perspective on what Arias can be was one of my favorite things that we could have done this this entire episode. And, you know, thank you for, you know, just sitting through us through this crazy episode of sound problems with the little snow incident. But if you want to follow the site, it's at @EVT_news. If you want to follow James, @EVT_JClark. I'm Austin Hartsfield @HartsfieldPC. This has been the EVT Podcast, and we are out.